Welcome to the Prenda Podcast. I'm Kelly Smith, and I'm looking for the best new ideas in education. I'll be talking to all sorts of people about new types of schools, reinventing education, and helping kids love learning. I hope you enjoy the conversation. It is October 4th, and I am talking via Zoom with Milena Kapoor. Milena is a student in California. She lives in the Bay Area, and super fascinating. She has tried alternative schools and charter schools, and I don't know if public schools are in there somewhere. She's currently crafting her own school, and Milena is just a really inspiring student. I think she's the type, if you're an educator listening to this podcast, you're going to be super jealous that Milena is not in your class. So the way we'll do this is today we want to talk about the conversation or the question of how can education be personalized. And you'll see that Milena has put a lot of thought and effort into personalizing her own education, but she also has great ideas, having participated in a lot of the kind of cutting edge and really interesting things that are happening in the Bay Area around education. I'm excited about this conversation, so thanks for being here, Milena.
Thanks for having me.
It's really great to chat with you. So let's, why don't you tell a little bit about your story? Maybe first, I couldn't remember, are you 14, 15?
15 now,
15
yeah.
Years old. So you would be in ninth grade or so if you were doing
a sophomore.
Sophomore in high school. Okay, 10th, sure. and you're, I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense, and we'll learn why, but why don't you go ahead and get started with kind of your beginnings of education? Like, I know I've met your parents. I know you guys are a family that values learning and education. Was it always that way for you growing up? You've just always wanted to learn?
I mean, definitely, yeah. And I started out for my first few years in elementary school at a pretty traditional, smaller elementary school near my house. And around fourth grade is when I started feeling like there were too many constraints within the traditional education system, and the things that I was interested in pursuing and the questions I had weren't always given like the time or the space to be answered. So in fifth grade, I moved to a Montessori school, which was a huge switch for me. It was, again, smaller classes, mixed age, a lot of hands-on project-based learning. And in that way, it was great. But at that point, I also started realizing that there are a lot of great schools, especially here in the Bay Area, which have amazing mission statements and, you know, the shadow days, they always look great. But when you come back down to it and you experience a couple years in that model, there's not really that much that's different from a traditional model of education. And some of the details might be changed, but I think for every student in some domain, there's always going to be a point where you hit a wall and you can't go forward, or you slip through the cracks and go backwards. And that's kind of what I ran into around sixth grade. So I moved again to a new experimental school in Mountain View, where that was probably one of the most fulfilling experiences in education I'd had up until that point, because it was completely hands-on learning, projects. We got to make movies, we got to write poetry, and both of those things are something I'm very interested in, and design our own projects and go as far as we wanted in academics, which is also something that's been important to me for a long time. And we had lots of leadership opportunities. And also something that was important to me is students had a very active role in designing the school because it was brand new. I went to the school in its inaugural year. And I think that really helped shape the foundation, and I think for students to come. So that was very exciting. So it was seventh grade. It was Khan Lab School in Mountain View.
Okay, and this is the famous Sal Khan, who has the Khan Academy, opening up a brand new school, sort of, I'm assuming, around some of the principles of the Khan Academy, but also lots more freedom beyond that.
Yeah, so it was based on the principle of Sal Khan's book, The One World Schoolhouse, which is the idea of mixed-age, project-based learning that prepares students for the new world with a lot more innovation and experimentation. So that was a really rewarding and fulfilling experience because students were given the freedom to choose projects and to go as far as they wanted in academics. And there were many leadership opportunities. And some examples are, I've always been interested in poetry. So I was able to take an online course in poetry and then create a film around my poetry and work with different organizations on that. And also there was a lot of opportunities for students to provide input into the actual model of the school since it was so new. And that was also an amazing experience because really being able to shape a completely new community and a completely new model of education, I think really makes sure that it doesn't only work for teachers or is not only scalable, but it's actually serving the people it's meant to serve, which is the students.
Right.
So that was really important.
So let's do a little compare and contrast. I'm sure this is something you've done in your school work.
Yeah.
You've got yourself as a fourth grader, you said kind of constrained, right? So maybe you had something you were real interested in, you wanted to learn about, and you just felt like maybe you had to move on. It was like, oh, time's up. Got to move on to the next unit, the next chapter. Mm-hmm. Compare that, you know, just, you know, for the sake of an exercise, maybe come up with something specific that you would have wanted to do in fourth grade, but then you're mentioning the story about poetry and making a film around your mm-hmm. poetry, which just sounds mind-blowingly cool as a seventh grader. So like, I mean, what were the big differences between those two kind of approaches?
I mean, for one, I think personally, I also grew a lot from fourth grade until seventh grade just because of the different kinds of schools I was exposed to.
Right.
But one example is something I've been interested in for a while is humanitarian work and nonprofits. And I mean, of course, it was also an elementary school with a lot younger kids, but there wasn't really an opportunity at all to explore those kinds of interests when I was in fourth grade or before, or even in the school I went to in between.
Yeah.
And then at the Khan Lab School, you know, I was able to start a nonprofit working with kids in East Palo Alto to teach how to cook affordable meals and healthy meals. And I was able to work on partnering with different organizations and community members within East Palo Alto. And then later I was able to work with some of my classmates in, we were very struck by the Syrian refugee crisis. And right. So we started a letter writing program where we held an event to have students and parents come and write letters, and then we had a classmate translate them into Arabic, and then we partnered with another nonprofit who said they'd be willing to send the letters off. So just those kinds of opportunities would never have come in a traditional model, or even some of the innovative ones in the Bay Area.
So, and what I think is fascinating about this, if you look at seventh grade at the Khan Lab school, like there's Malena, it's not like some teacher was saying, hey, you should care about Syrian refugees. Like you should organize something. Here's your project. Here's the criteria that you have to hit. It was just more of like Malena coming to them and saying, hey, educator, this is what I want to do. I mean, is that more of how it went?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think there are a lot of people who are able to do really amazing projects like this within the traditional school system. But I think what a model like the Khan Lab School does is it not only allows you the freedom to do that within the school day with access to your teachers and your community on campus, the teachers and staff are very willing to help you connect to the outside community, give you the tools and communication or organization that you need to really make it successful. So right. It's not just writing down on a piece of paper that you did something. It's helping you make an impact in whatever area you're interested in, whether that's a nonprofit or coding or math or something like that. You
right.
know?
So, okay. So I want to dig in because I think this is really helpful. For example, I want to help the kids in East Palo Alto cook nutritious meals, affordable meals. That's your idea. Right? Mm-hmm. Where did that idea come from? Was it something you had talked about at school or some other part of your life? Somewhere you got that idea.
Yeah. Well, I think that something that's really helpful that a couple of schools do, I think, and the Khan Lab School did as well, is there's this idea of an inquiry arc. And what that means is there's one theme for a term or a semester, okay, which students come up with projects related to that. So for one semester, that theme was food. And so I started doing research into food insecurity, which is something, you know, you hear about all the time.
Right.
And then I came up with this idea. And then since I became so personally invested in it, then I was able to make that last beyond the term for a couple of years while I was there.
Yeah. And it's literally like a nonprofit that still exists and you run it.
Unfortunately, there were some problems, but when I graduated and someone had a family emergency there, but
right. What a great experience, yeah, though, to be able to do that. So, okay. So I want to, you've got this arc of inquiry. You're going to study food for the year. So you start thinking food. It's like, oh, look, there's people right here close to my, you know, kind of my community that mm-hmm. could benefit from, you know, some of the science or the nutritional science. Maybe there's economics in there. So you're starting to like pull from different subject matter, right? Different content areas put together. And then were you like interfacing with an adult at the lab school throughout that process? Is that how it worked? I mean, tell me about how those meetings were, and what were they doing? Were they like introducing you to people? Were they like going out with you, like helping you do the legal part of setting up a nonprofit? I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved in that.
Yeah. So I think the important part, and this is something that's very hotly debated all over, you know, different kinds of educational models, is what's the role of the teacher?
Exactly.
And for me, I think it's really important that a teacher supports you and inspires you and helps you do what you're passionate about. But at the same time, is not doing things for you and kind of putting one foot in front of yours or leading you in a direction, you know, that you may not want to go in.
Yeah.
And I think when I first started this nonprofit, my teacher was extremely helpful in that he didn't introduce me to people or help me set up meetings. I mean, that was all me, and he helped me learn some of the communication skills, but you know, I was going out talking to people in the community. I was finding email addresses and emailing, you know, things like that, which are, I think, important in the long run. But then my teacher was there to kind of sit down with me every couple of weeks and say, okay, where do we want this to go? What's the next step? Or was able to come with me and do supervision, you know, during the cooking classes, or help me construct a vision rather than just treating it as something more linear, like class, class, class. And so that was extremely helpful for me, because especially in seventh grade, I never had exposure to building an organization. And then I think that helped me as I went on to work with my classmates in the Syrian Refugee Project and right. other projects I did during that time.
Amazing.
And even that I'm doing now.
Yeah. So there's underlying kind of core, both like conventional, like educational concepts, but also these, what do you call like non-cognitive skills, right? But
yeah.
to be able to put together a vision and build the organization and do the leadership and the interpersonal. And that's amazing. So you got all of that with some help and coaching, but mm-hmm. it sounds like it was totally you, which is amazing. And I guess I'm sure there's people listening to this right now. They're like, okay, this girl's amazing. Like, I'm impressed, but most kids aren't like this. So let's talk a little bit about you know, you were there at the school, you were helping design the school, you mm-hmm. saw probably all kinds of different kids. Let's talk a little bit about how, I mean, I would imagine this amount of progress and thriving inside of that loose but supportive structure maybe wouldn't work for everybody. Or there's people that didn't end up going and starting a nonprofit or helping Syrian refugees, right? Like, give me some kind of, let's think a little bit about kind of other students and just from your experience of seeing your peers, you know, would you say that a model like this is great for everyone? Or does personalization, I guess here's the big question, does personalization mean the same thing for every student?
I definitely think not. And of course, that's kind of in the name itself, personalization, you know, it's unique to each person. And I think something that I just noticed while I was in these different kinds of schools is I think there's, and I've been actually, maybe I can tell you a little later, doing some research this year in education, and I've kind of categorized that there's three different types of students in the way that they react to a new educational model. So I think the first one is very excited about joining this new model, taking advantage of all the opportunities,
That's might you, have right? some.
I don't know, but might have some setbacks, but is able to keep going. Kind of is able to quickly adapt to that new structure,
right?
And maybe that's something that that person has been looking for a while and kind of imagining themselves in. And then the second type of person is someone who's been stuck in a traditional model for many years. And especially for people who are coming in middle and high school, you know, they've been going to traditional school for a very long time. So sometimes when they're given new freedoms and new opportunities, it can be difficult to take advantage of those just because it's not something that they've been used to for so long.
Are you saying like they're conditioned kind of? It's almost like education is go to this place, sit down in this chair, like wait for this information to be like given to you, and then like show that the information is there through like assessments and worksheets and tests. I mean, is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think like even when given the opportunity to design a project, some people just might base it off what they had done previously. So something very traditional, very constrained. So I think the model needs to adjust in that way to kind of bring out people who just aren't used to it because it's such a big shift. They've spent most of their time in a traditional model, anywhere from 5 to 8 years, you know, so that's a very long time.
It's interesting you say this. So just this summer, and you and I have talked about this, I'm experimenting with sort of a version of school that I think is going to look like a cross between Khan Lab School and maybe some of these other things that are provide a little more structure. But projects are a huge piece of it. I think there's plenty of research that's going to work well. And I gave the kids a challenge. I did these week-long summer camps over the summer. And it was a kind of a fun experiment. I said, your job is to learn about a subject. You pick the subject, but you have to know more about it than I do. And then teach me about it and teach the rest of the class. So basically like, you know, go be an expert on something. And it was funny to watch, like some of them really dove in. I think I saw your different types of students because some of them said, awesome, you know, and one kid was trying to do like computer vision or something. I was like some aspect of artificial intelligence, really going far. One of the kids was, and I don't blame him for this, but he said, oh great. Like I did a report on Davy Crockett this year in fourth grade. So he went and dug out his report on Davy Crockett, like maybe changed a few things to it, but it was like he knew that the requirement was know more about something than I do, and then he just was able to sort of it wasn't that he just wouldn't have thrived in the model, but I think he was approaching it from a kind of a perspective and a view of like, okay, well, what's the requirement? Oh great, the easiest way to meet that requirement is to take my old report, like tune some stuff up. And maybe he's in that second group that you're talking about, the second group of kids.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's people are consciously trying to take an easier way. And sometimes that can be a harder way, you know. It's just, as you said, they're very conditioned.
Okay.
And then I think a third kind of person is one that comes into the model, really embraces it, but then kind of takes the freedoms too far, you know. Like, oh, there's no grades, so why do I need to, you know, put as much effort into my academics? Or, oh, there's not a traditional form of punishment. I'm not going to be suspended or even expelled. So, you know, my behavior doesn't have to be at the same standard that I forced myself to have in my previous school.
Right.
And I think in that way, even just being in one classroom with different kinds of people, not as many walls, it's difficult for people to adjust and say, okay, I'm sitting next to someone who's working on math while I'm over here drawing my, you know, making a project, creating something, and someone else is over there giving a presentation.
Right.
And so on that hand, it can be difficult. And on the other hand, people say, okay, I can make whatever project I want under food. Let's make it some, like, let's bake cookies from a mix or something and just call it. I met my requirements and now I can go play. Or now that I have so much access to computers, I can do something, whatever I want on the computer. So I think in that way, it's also difficult.
Do you have an estimate of what percentage of the world that is?
And I don't think I can say that. I haven't gone to that many schools. But, you know, I think there's a significant amount of people in each group.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you talk. So there's two things that happen with those kids. And I'm very familiar with this too, because we've been piloting the same. The reason I'm looking at school in the first place is because I've been running these code clubs, these coding after school coding programs. They're all optional. So nobody has to be there. And it's been funny to watch. Like, I've seen all three groups, right? I've seen the ones that come in and they're like, whoa, I can, you know, make all this stuff. And some of them are making web apps by the time they're 13 and ready to go get a job, you know, and get paid more than I do. And that's great. Like, some of them are more of like tentative, like, well, tell me what to do. And they have to sort of be reconditioned. I think that's maybe that second group. And then there's always some that just show up and they're like, wait, so you're not going to tell me what to do? Like, I'm used to being told what to do. Great. Like, and they'll just play, right? They just want to play games. Mm-hmm. And there was one kid that like went, he would come every week for like 8 months and never coded a single thing. You know, he just played the whole time. And it was interesting. It's interesting to watch. Two things happen to those kids. One is they don't learn, obviously, right? They're not trying to, and they're not taking initiative. We can try to kind of coax them along. And we do a lot of that, like as adults, kind of guiding them and helping them. But then the second thing that's a little bit more concerning to me is the interaction with the other kids. It can be distracting, right? Were there times where some of those kids like actually brought the group down or like prevented others from being able to learn when you saw those? I mean, I'm sure that you had them in the different schools that you attended.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of course, and I think that there are always kids and people like that in groups that you're always going to work with. I think the bigger problem is probably that a lot of these schools are pioneering very new models, and the models work for a specific type of person and they work pretty well for a lot of other kinds of people. So right now I think it's just tailoring that model to make sure that really anyone can succeed in it, which is the intention, you know? So I think it's not really something that's a failure of the student. It's rather something that the model hasn't adjusted to yet.
So are you saying that you would prefer to see kind of a tailored, maybe different schools or maybe within the same school, but a different approach really? Like some of the kids get more, a little bit more structure and requirements, where it's almost like you have to earn the freedom. Is that like, how are you looking at it?
Well, I think there's, and I've done research on different kinds of schools which have different freedom levels or things like that, where you can graduate and go all the way to the highest one, which is, you know, no limits, no restrictions. And I think that works for some people, but then you're kind of left with the opposite problem, which is that if you're someone who's highly motivated or if you're someone who has a great idea for a project, you're hindered by all these roadblocks that are in your way and these things you have to achieve or prove before you can get to the top. And I think, of course, the ideal thing would be for each teacher to meet with each student and understand and make tailored plans based on that student's personality or previous experiences. And I think there just needs to be a way to do that more efficiently without compromising the quality of those interactions.
Interesting. Well, let's do talk. You've alluded to this already, but you are no longer doing, you graduated from ConLab school. You've moved to what would be high school, but I know you did some shopping. Why don't you talk a little bit about your
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. So after I graduated from the ConLab school, I was looking for a similar experience in high school, but you know, I looked around at a lot of high schools in the Bay Area, and some were very progressive but didn't have strong academic programs. Others were strong academically but didn't have a lot of flexibility. Others were just mixes of qualities I wanted and didn't want in my high school experience. And after a while, and after meeting with a lot of students and parents and teachers, I decided that I was going to homeschool for high school, which it's pretty drastic, I think, because just a few years before, my opinion was, okay, homeschooling, that's where you sit at the kitchen counter in your pajamas and your mom gives you A pluses or something like that. So I think a lot of people, even when they are like, you're homeschooling, they still feel like that's, you know, that's their vision of what homeschooling is.
Right.
And I would say, I don't know, maybe there are some people who do that. But for me, it's just been an extremely freeing experience. It's allowed me to go even further in the areas I'm interested in, to have the support to go even deeper in all the academic subjects I'm really passionate about. It's allowed me to open my eyes to new subjects as well. And I think this is important, that innovative education doesn't mean you just do what you're good at or what has appealed to you so far. It's also a way to expand your horizons,
right,
and look at new opportunities, which I've gotten a chance to do. And
well, let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what's a new subject that you've encountered this year homeschooling?
So for a while, in a lot of the innovative schools that I went to, there weren't very strong science programs, actually. And so I actually missed out on a lot of the formative, like your biology course, your chemistry course, in middle school. And of course, in elementary school, it was just life sciences, things like that. And so actually, I've been able to take, in my last year at Common Lab School, I took AP Physics. In my freshman year, I took AP Chemistry. And this year, I'm doing a deep dive into biology, which is something I've been interested in for a very long time. And I've joined an organization which uses STEM to address humanitarian crises across the world. And I'm thinking, you know, I've talked to some of my friends who are homeschooling, who are working in labs, and I'm thinking about doing something like that either this year or next. So I honestly didn't even really care for science as a subject that much, which I'm kind of sad to say, but I think it just goes to show that when I was given so much exposure, it's become a love of mine now and something I'm extremely interested in, not only just for this year or next year, but maybe even as a career option in the future.
Awesome. That's a really neat example, and thanks for sharing that. So I noticed in there you said friends, your homeschooling friends.
Yeah.
I think there's a perception that homeschoolers don't have any friends. Like you said, you're sitting by yourself with your mom. Why don't you talk about like the social side of learning and how you've done that and sort of created, like drawn the people around you that you wanted to learn with?
Yeah. The first thing everyone always asks is, do you have any friends or are you a social person? And I think that at least
of course you are. I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah. at least for me, I've been able to form much better friendships homeschooling, because I think when you're at a traditional school or a large school, you might meet a lot more people and know a lot more people and interact with a lot more people. But now that I'm homeschooling and I'm focusing on these very specific areas of interest, I'm able to make friends that share those specific interests. And so I think my friendships are more meaningful. There's more to discuss. There's more to learn from each other.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it's been much better social experience for me, actually, homeschooling.
So your friends in a public high school might have been saying, hey, let's go to this party on Friday night. Your friends right now are saying, let's go work in the lab at Stanford or something and learn biotech.
And, I mean, we have fun too, but
no, of course. Yeah. I'm not against parties. I mean, some kinds of parties.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. So, that's amazing. Tell me a little bit about your research. I thought this was super interesting. For those of you guys listening, Milena, and hopefully this isn't embarrassing to you, I was like trying to hire Milena, cause she's like, looked at every kind of school. I'm trying to design a school. I was like, okay, Milena, I need help. But she was busy. And you ended up doing some research for the Christensen Institute. Is this right?
Yeah, that's right. So this year, and kind of in similar way to the inquiry arc I was describing earlier, I decided to focus my year on education. And over the summer, last summer, I helped start a charter school in East Palo Alto and worked with them to design curriculum and kind of work on the model also. And then this year, I worked on two projects with the Christensen Institute. So the first one, I partnered with the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and we researched teacher professional development in innovative schools. So how are professional development organizations helping teachers adjust to making more personalized lessons or more innovative projects and things like that? So we kind of did a survey of the industry there. And then for the last half of last year, I worked on my own project, which I designed, where I was researching how students transition from traditional middle schools to innovative high schools. So off of what we were talking about earlier, how can innovative high schools help ease that transition?
Right. And group so, number two and maybe number three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I interviewed innovative schools from around the world, traditional schools, students at traditional middle schools, at innovative high schools who had come and made that transition. And then I wrote a series of four blog posts for the Christensen Institute at the end of the year, documenting my research and also my recommendations.
Okay, so Malena, I'm sure people listening are going to want to read these posts because this is fascinating stuff for all of us. And if you can, just send me a link to that. I will make sure it gets up on the link when we post this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that okay?
Great. Yeah.
Some people reading your. Well, Malena, anything else you want to add as we kind of sum this up? Let's just talk about kind of back to the main question of this conversation is how can education really be personalized and personalized, you know, for different types of students, as you've indicated. Do you have any kind of summary thoughts on that? And I know a lot of people are thinking about that. You're looking through, you know, you've had so many different experiences and angles on this and your own story, but you've also seen lots of other people's stories. What do you think when you look at kind of system-wide or even just one school, how can you really do this? How can education really be personalized?
Well, I think it's a big question, I think the most important part is making sure students have an opportunity to follow their interests and making sure that students have opportunities to develop interests. So whether that's, exposing them to different kinds of academic content, whether that's getting opportunities to go out into the what we call real world and make an impact in the community or work in labs or with other teachers. Schools really need to help students develop that and then go forward and incorporate academics and other important skills into projects. And then teachers, on that hand, I think really need to be attuned to what each of their students' previous experiences have been, what their experiences are now, what kind of personalities they have, what their interests are, and where they want to go, and really helping students design some sort of a plan or agenda for how they're going to accomplish the things they're interested in and how they're going to study what they're really passionate about.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a different skill set maybe than in the past. It was the teacher knows the facts and the teacher is telling me the facts. There's too many facts for one person to know. I mean,
exactly.
All these kids that want to learn different things, it's actually impossible for that person to know everything, right?
And I think it's really important. That point is extremely important because you might even have a physics teacher, right? But I think more important than having someone who can cover the basics, which is extremely important, you need someone who can also point students to, okay, you're very interested in particle acceleration. Here's how we can get you in contact with some experts. Here how we can get you in contact with people in the community, and knowing how to connect students to resources that might not be on campus, I think makes for a much more rich experience within that education.
Yeah, like curator, connector, coach, mentor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Malena Kapoor, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience and your thoughts on this question. We'll all be trying to, everybody that's listening, I'm sure, will be thinking about this, is how can we better personalize education and help kids basically, you know, get the kind of experience that you're having, lots more of them. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Prenda Podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this conversation or innovating in education. And if you want to follow my progress designing a new model for school, you can learn more at school.prenda.co.